Hello and welcome to the Surface Tension Podcast. My name is Alex. My co-host over here is Craig. We are going to be exploring deep questions and looking for deep answers to spiritual questions and questions about life in general. We're happy to have you here, and here we go.
Hi, welcome to our podcast. We have a special guest with us today, Jonathan Duncan. My nephew. See, I refer to you as my nephew. And we did that with your brother's podcast, and people kept coming up to me saying, I'm so sorry about your sister. And I'm like, oh, we needed to clarify that a little bit. So I don't like saying what step. I know, whatever. It's your family. I feel like you're my blood. And It's so fun to have you in the studio just to hear your God story. But even right before we started this, you prayed for us. And it quieted my heart. Because it was such an amazing prayer. It's not something that would have probably come out of your mouth 2 years ago.
No.
And you are an answer to prayer for me and a lot of people. It's your God story. So where would you start telling your God story if you were just going to say, all right, here it is. I'm going to give you the full version of it. This isn't the elevator pitch. This isn't the, we're in a 20-story building and I got to get this story out quickly. It's where does your God story start?
Yeah. I need to pray into these things because my mind and heart run so fast. If I don't quiet myself, I may miss what the Lord is putting on my heart to speak. Obviously there's so many ways to tell the story, but just going back, when I think about you asking the question, when did my God story start? It started when I was young. I was brought up in a Christian family. My mother and my father both portrayed Christian morals, and they brought us to church every Sunday. Being a kid and going to Sunday school was more of playtime, and I loved the feeling of being around other people. And obviously, going to church on Sunday became fun and for the wrong reasons, right? We were kids, like, we don't know any better than just learning about Jesus through coloring books, through all these other little things. But as I grew older, I began to resent, I resented the person behind the podium. And my truth behind this anger inside was that this person is telling me how to live life. What I learned now that the way that Jonathan operates is I like to be in control, and this person teaching all these people on how to live their life allowed them to be in control and their eyes were off me. So that's where all my little copious defects of temper tantrums and, maybe doing something that got me in a little bit of trouble started. My mom passed away when I was 12, and this was a really rude awakening in my soul. And I watched what worked for my dad, at least what I thought looked like it worked for my dad, which was drinking. I stole a bottle of wine that night and brought it up to my room and tried to figure out how to get this cork off.
At 12?
12 years old. I am a big learner, visualized learner, just trying to understand why that works like that, right? Like, this is the way that knot works, like, tie it like that. And the feeling that I got from that first sip of wine and as it settled was relief. There was this huge hole inside. And that hole was like, I gave my life to the Lord at a young age, but that went out the window the minute my mom passed away. And I created like my first real deal resentment. God wasn't a part of my life then. I did not allow him to be. I put him in a box and I put, you took my mother away from me. You are not my friend. You are not my father. You are not love. And that was just like the first kind of feeling of like just unsettled, like my unsettled soul of departing from anything to do with spirituality, with religion, with, you know, and these were all concepts in my life as I grew up that weren't very large concepts. I was obsessed with myself. I was obsessed with like getting fed through anything that's focused on me. Like I just wanted to worship myself, you know, and that's whatever that may be, like little crushes or surfing or anything that gets me further. So just going along kind of with that, we were in a very, I say we, my brother, you know, we share a very similar story. So, we were in a very, very like, very intricate spot in life where, you know, my dad was grieving. My brother and I had just kind of had the leashes extended on us, or like we can even put it this way, like severed. There was times where we were gone from the house multiple days at a time. Like dad wasn't really checking in at times. We were learning how to cope with our outside surroundings. And these were, these surroundings were not a positive impact on my life. My dad saw very quickly that they weren't. And so we were pulled up, not pulled, but taken out of the current situation and brought to Newport Beach. This is where I stepped into high school and just was living with this false sense of security. For me, it was being told that I was loved. I lost my mother, who was the most nourishing, nurturing part of my life. She was the contentment to being loved. And the way that I reciprocated that in my own self-will was having a woman tell me that. So I immediately dated, you know, I immediately wanted the validation. And validation was that, you know, that hole in my soul was covered, at least like thrown a bridge over when I had a woman in my life telling me that I was important. But like they were important because they made me feel important.
Yeah. Your self-awareness is amazing.
Huge. Oh, it's beautiful.
It's incredible.
Incredible gift. And, you know, I also have to add, there's some people that might just sit back with their arms crossed and judge. It's like, well, okay, how are you coping with life's challenges? How did you when you were 12? Because we all have a story of what we ran to, and they just could be different things. Yeah. And I love the fact that you're so aware of what that is. And you started to, even at that age, you probably even sensed that even at the time. Gosh, you know what? I have this huge craving, and these are Band-Aids, but there's this deeper undertow of deep neediness that I need to figure out a solution to.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was that feeling like where, and I was not like this then, you know, I didn't know the feelings that I was feeling. How could I? I was a 12-year-old run rampage.
Yeah.
You know, I was thinking about me and how the quickest way I could feel good feeling me.
Yes.
You know, and whatever form that may be.
Right.
And that was a lot of forms of my life. That was surfing. That was going outside with friends. And then on top of that, there was the unhealthy side of things that was drinking and women. You know, and just going back to God, right? Like high school for me, God was out of the equation, you know. Putting the other side of my life, you know, with the abuse and everything aside for a moment, like God, I put God in that box and that box stayed to the side. And, you know, I didn't hear God for a long time. You know, I thought about spirituality. You know, I stepped into a program that told me that I had to have a higher power, you know, and, you know, something telling me something obviously doesn't work. You know, right, we know that now. And, you know, I began to worship like, you know, I began to like worship a campfire. Mm-hmm. Like, bought a Sprinter van, lived out of it for a couple of years. Just, you know, I was worshiping that feeling of being quiet in the outdoors. Mm-hmm. Great feeling. great place to learn, great place to listen. But not when you have a lot of other, these toxic stuff that's still in your life.
Well, and the mountains don't love you back, do they?
I'll tell you, I've never been hugged by one. I've hugged many, but that has not been reciprocated. That is for sure.
And people need to know that you did downhill mountain bike racing for a while.
So yeah, it wasn't just this like, hey, I'm jumping into a van and leaving society. It was the convenience when I would race mountain bikes to have a little living situation.
Well, in the hugging the mountain part too, it wasn't you just snuggling up with a rock at, by your own choice.
It was being thrown towards the mountain in a very fast and aggressive manner. Thus, my knees and elbows could show you.
Exactly.
So yeah, and this was just a moment where, you know, I knew that, you know, I was given parameters for this program to have a higher power. And, you know, fast forwarding a little bit, you know, I'd entered a relationship with a woman when I was 17, and we were on and off for the better part of like 7 years. And when God, like when you say God, when I think about God and I think about what God did to pull me back towards him in his timing, not mine. You know, I was drugged through the mud a little bit, you know, more in parts of my life than others. But there was about three times where my soul, you know, gave me this unurging or this just uncomfortable emerging feeling of, you are not supposed to be with this woman and you are ignoring me. Like, you are ignoring me. Mm-hmm. And the best way that I knew how to make myself feel good in that moment was just to pack everything on top of that feeling, to just not deal with it. Mm-hmm. And I did that three times. And God stepped into a bar with me one day. This was about two years and a couple months ago. And a woman came up to me and she told me where I was at in life. She looked at me and said, like, I just know you. And I looked at her. I'm like, give it to me. Come on. Let's hear it. You know me. And she told me that I was in a relationship scared to get out of the relationship, to feel uncomfortable, to lose that security, to step into the unknown, you know? Like, I've always been very comfortable with having my hands on the known, my truths of what brings me comfort. Even though they were a false sense of what comfort is in my life, they were those. Hmm. And I listened to this woman, and this woman told me exactly where I was at. And she told me it's because the Lord told her to come and talk to me. Hmm. And for some weird reason, it stuck. I couldn't lie anymore. I could not live in the false sense of self, you know? I truly believe we have two selves. Like, I believe that our innermost core tells us to do something. That's your true self. Like, that's the thing to listen to. That's the voice of just your true soul trying to unleash itself into this world. Like, we need more people that are alive, not people that are just created through all these other things. And I heard that voice, like, finally power through a lot of that wreckage that, you know, I had to excavate, you know, and put on there.
Did you meet that with open arms, or was there still friction? Is there still friction with that to this day? I mean, I know in my story, sometimes I put up walls and I want to wrestle control back into my own court. So I would think that that story would be similar in your regard, but it sounds like when you heard this authentic voice of God and you really felt him get a hold of you through this gal, it sounds like there was some beauty and almost some relief in it. Did you feel that?
In the moment? Absolutely not. Because it was a moment of change. And it was a drastic moment of change. It was a moment where I didn't need to make the decision, but the decision was starting to be made in me. And to talk about control, like, you know, we had a conversation. I love having my hands on the joysticks of life. It's a comfortable place to be. You know, like, you know, unfortunately, a lot of our youth are brought up with joysticks in their hands. Mm-hmm. What a weird analogy to think that that is something that they can probably put into their life of like, hey, I can control this thing on a screen. Everything. Maybe that thing on the screen is life.
Start controlling life. Yep.
You know, and the joystick was ripped out. Forcefully. And the next day, I couldn't fake my smile. I couldn't lie to myself anymore. That feeling in my pit of my stomach of you need to change was about in my throat, you know, past my heart already, you know, that was the night prior. Touched my heart that night. And that was the day that I hit my knees for the first time in probably 10 years and prayed. And I don't know who I was praying to. I was praying to that feeling. I was praying to that feeling of just like, I feel like I have a possible strength to walk into this. And among that, you know, there was other things that were going on in my life. You know, we get into about drinking and just abuse that were also being called in that moment to stop.
Yeah. So I'm curious, when I'm hearing this, it sounds like in a moment, in an instant, you felt incredibly known and you felt kind of naked. Did you also feel loved or just known? Because sometimes being known and not having the assurance of love can be terrifying. So would you say it was just the feeling of being known or was there an accompanying feeling of love?
I think there was I think it was more known. What I later found out is that the feeling inside was a God who loves me for who I am in all places and all circumstances. And that love is eternal. That love is unparable. Yeah. Like you cannot parallel that love.
Thank you for sharing that. And I think it's important for a lot of people because people have different journeys towards the heart of the Father. And yours started with, oh, wow, I'm known. And then you grew into this sense of and loved. Some people can start with, oh, I'm so loved. And then it turns into unknown. It takes a while for people to feel known. And so there's a different journey sometimes, that heart of the Father. So thank you for sharing that.
Absolutely.
So, what was the time period like from going from exposed to loved, and what helped move you towards love the most?
Great question. The time frame was not in a time frame that I wanted, I'll tell you that.
Took too long.
It took too long. There were some, very, very, trying times as I decided and stepped into this uncomfortability in my life. First off of getting sober, second off of like changing my situation, which ultimately changed my life, friends, living situation, girlfriend, work, everything changed. And I don't think I understood the grace of the Father until multiple months after, when I started seeing how the dark times in that span of a couple months came full circle. And that was when I was like, okay, I understand how you work. Maybe, you know, maybe. At least I understand why I went through that. And the purpose that I'm playing now and how that was a part of equipping me to fulfill this role you put me in now.
I have an odd question for you, which is, what is something or a few things that God loves about you deeply that you don't quite love about yourself or in that time or maybe even now? And that question, I don't even know if I could answer that one. So if I'm laying on something that's a little too thick, you can always say like, hey, hard pass. I might have to noodle on that one. But we've talked about this before, is God loves all of us.
Yes.
Not just when we're in the perfect lane and doing things right. Hmm. So I hear those elements of your story that you're like, oh, this was tricky. I wasn't good here, but God still has love for those areas of us. And that's tough to wrap our heads around, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and very very deep question. I'll answer that to the most ability that I can. I think through the the bad, the ugly times in my life where in the moment I didn't think those things of myself, but I may have been told, or that other people showed me that I was like. And I'm talking about, you know, what I was like when I was drinking or how I interacted in relationships. I think you go through these things and they equip you to this next possible thing that may be coming, right? And then this just goes back to like dependency and trust in the Lord, right? Because you know his plan is good. Your plan is full. You are learning what your name is. You know, you're learning what is under your name, that resume that's under your name. And it doesn't have to be filled with stuff, but it's filled with like God's testimony, you know? And so your question is, what do I think God is using me for, or like loves me for this reason of like who I am? Is that kind of
basis? Yeah. What's a part of you that you're not the most fired up on that God loves about you immensely? Or what part of your story do you not celebrate very often, but God loves it probably the most of all?
Yeah. I don't think I have a spot like that, because I've really feel that I have understood why I was in every season of life until, I wouldn't say now, I'm constantly thinking about seasons of life I'm in right now and why they're not, you know, I'm understanding why I'm in them. But
I look back
on maybe like the things that are very like large and kind of elephant in the room worthy. And those things have been ironed out. So I guess I don't have like a way to answer that question in its full max. But I would say that I know that I'm loved through every situation, and I know that I have stepped on people's toes. I have pushed people in front of the bus. I have pushed people onto the sword, you know, and just in my integrity when I was in pressured situations was out of the window. You know, I wanted to be on the high grounds, let others drown. And so when I think about those times and the pain and the hurt, I guess that like those are the times where like I wish I could have understood how I was operating, but I know that it just has become full circle with how God was using me in that moment and how I've tried to bring peace to those moments.
So good. Yeah. You know, I still think back to your earlier story. God walks into a bar. I'm like, I was expecting a joke, but you're like, no. God. And he does. He walks into bars, to different places, because he meets us where we're at. If you were just to identify like maybe three moments, people, or situations since that time until now that were incredibly formative for you in a healthy way, what would those be? Those little kind of touch points where God walked into a bar and then maybe he walked onto a beach with you, or he walked... Yeah. What would you identify as the maybe three most significant questions, moments, lessons, things that catapulted you to a higher connection with him? And, you know, as you're thinking about it, my daughter shared with me something that they heard at a junior high camp, Christian camp, years ago, because the speaker said, not only does God save, he also shapes. And sometimes we can get so captivated with the God who saves and the point where he did the miraculous thing that he's done in your life, in your brother's life, in our lives, that we zero in on that and realize, oh, God saves. He's amazing. Yeah. But he also shapes, and he shapes over time. I've heard, maybe shared in the podcast before, that sometimes people come to know Jesus like a bee sting. Zip, zap. There it is. I got it. Here's the time. Here's the date. And for other people, it's like C.S. Lewis said, it's like a rosebud just slowly opening up over time. Mm. I think both stories are amazing. And sometimes if we have a God who's shaping a story that might be a little longer in duration, we need to identify those touch points. Oh, it's here, here, and here. These were major movements in my heart and life. So what would you What would you share?
Yeah. You know, starting out, I would say just like my first accelerant to like, I love Jesus was, you know, my testimony at church when I felt the Spirit flush me for the first time. I am a huge fan of old Travis Rice snowboard movies. Love M83, love euphoric music that brings just incredible joy, vibrations, all those things to my soul. And I pair that a lot with like experiences I've had, right? I'm at church. This is a church down in San Clemente, California called Zion. It was outdoors at a time in this parking lot. And this was in the beginning of my, you know, my faith journey. And we're sitting after and we're sitting, you know, the band is activating. The band is worshiping there. They're just, the music is there. And I don't know God, you know, but I've always been really nervous about my hands, you know, and you know, shout out to my father, but he has always had his hands up, you know, throughout church. Our whole lives, I've always looked at him and been like, you are absolutely crazy. You're one of them. You know, my hands went up that day. And I felt as like a climax to a EDM song builds. I felt my life like as slides build up to this. And there was all these slides of pain, like sadness, of things that I held to like the core of my existence. And as like that song was just like in my head about to drop and my arms were like raised up higher and higher in the wind and activation, I felt like this bucket of white paint be poured on me. And all these things diminished and like the song changed. And it was just this feeling of like, this is the best feeling I've ever had since drugs and alcohol. Like, and this is just the beginning of it. I just want to feel this all the time.
What a command of imagery you have, man. That is so beautifully put. I'm just spellbound as I'm hearing you combine all of these elements and describe, gosh, what a transcendent experience. Mm. That one stays with you forever, huh?
Absolutely. And shout out to like the person who was kind of part of this next thing was when this a guy came and talked to me, you know, and I had been sitting alone at this church, you know, I'd been sitting in the back, you know, and just kind of doing my thing and kind of waiting to feel it out. You know, I'm looking at guys that like maybe, you know, I can fit the bill with, you know, maybe their externals fit my externals. And this guy named Tristan walked up to me and he walked up to me because this woman named Hannah told him to and said, go talk to that guy. Like, he seems like he needs someone, you know, and shout out to Hannah that she started this ripple effect in my life. But I talked with this guy and I created my first like godly friendship. And we met 2 days later and had coffee and just talked about our testimonies. So that would be like one of the first like kind of like experiences where I was like, all right, like I have entered this new realm of getting clean and healthy and trying to live a better life than I used to live, a more honest life, a life of morals, a life of integrity. And this was the catalyst to the beginning. And later that year, I was tested, you know, and I saw my brother. We always used to love riding Harleys. You know, we like to build them. We like to work on them. We lived in these vans and we would kind of live out of storage units, you know, and just kind of have like our home base be out of these storage units. And, you know, we always follow each other in these footsteps. And I think luckily he's taken routes, detours, right? That maybe I had to fall into the ditch and claw myself out of. Unfortunately, like he had to go through a pretty life changing experience to meet the Lord. Like the Lord had put this on his life and I didn't know why or what. But he crashed on his Harley and tomahawked into an off ramp sign on the freeway. He had had a brain surgery when he was 14 years old while we were surfing. And talk about traumatizing enough after mom passing away. And he went through 5 brain surgeries in the next 2 week span after this crash. And I thought I was going to lose my brother. I thought I was going to lose like my best friend. I thought I was going to lose like the man that I just always like looked towards and the joys of the conversations we had and just like the little things, like even going back to playing baseball and catching, like all those images like popped in my head. And, you know, this moment the Lord met me in, because after he was released from the ICU into like a post-care unit where his severity of his status is now gone from like high to a little bit lower, like, you know, his level of care doesn't need to be as intense. He, I thought that he was going to pass away. And this was just before that moment. And I had a hard time with a lot of people reaching out, trying to put their hands on the situation. I know it's from a good place, but for me, it was such a, okay, so I know this God, and I know this God has created me first off, who has like the best intentions for me, that puts me into these circumstances to better myself in either giving me more understanding of how he works, maybe making me more mature in faith. And I walked into this area of like, okay, like I just need to trust that Matt is in his exact spot for a reason, and trust that the Lord is working, because he is never not with us. And I had a lot of people get kind of angry with me. I told people that if Matt went to heaven, I'd be okay. And if Matt stayed with us, I'd be obviously more happy, but I'd be okay. And this was just say, you know, when we go full circle, like talking about a roller coaster ride going fully upside down, and understanding all the feelings that come with going up, staying upside down, and coming back down. I learned that like my God is faithful in that way, and that there is a purpose through everything in life. And Matt's purpose was just a very large speed bump. So that would be another moment where I just really had to rely on this new foundation of living that the Lord put in my life, through a program that I worked to stay sober, through the friends and the backbone of mentorship, from trusting other people with the deepest things in your heart. And this experience was just a lot, but you know, I saw the graciousness, and I saw what faithful trust in the Lord does. But just remain in that.
It's very good. Thank you.
I'm hearing that first encounter. If it was a chapter of a book, you might title it Joy. The second one that you just mentioned might be titled Trust Through Fear. Hmm. And if you're in a chapter now, what would you call it?
What is contentment? Yeah, that's where I'm at right now.
Go into it a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a very extreme person. Like, I really enjoy the high highs and understand the low lows. I'm a seeker, you know, and I know we've talked about this, Craig, but like understanding what my purpose is in seeking. You know, I'm always looking for the next situation. Like, I'm always looking for the next thing. I'm looking, I constantly sometimes find myself in a destination of happiness type of living. It's quite toxic, because you're missing out on the present, you know?
Right.
That's the gift, you know? So simple. You know, they talk about, you know, past, present, future. And right now, in this chapter called What is Contentment, I'm learning that, like, yes, like there are doors in the future about job opportunities. There are doors in the future about relationships. There are doors in the future about marriage, all these things that are in front of me, but they're not at arm's reach. And so I'm trying to stretch myself out to get to this door and open it up. And that's a really, really uncomfortable, frustrating, irritable sense of restlessness feeling that kind of comes with that. So I'm coming back to like, what is the joy of living, right? And what is the joy of remaining present? And I think about Philippians 4:12, and I think about, you know, how Paul talks about living in the extremes when he is fully either, you know, content with like he is full or he's empty, you know? And I find myself only saying that I'm content when things I think I need, get, or achieve are met, you know? And so it's been a process. I don't have, you know, the remedy right now. Big recipe guy, you know, I try to alter the recipes often and they don't come out right, you know? Yeah. No wonder there's someone that put in a ton of work. No wonder there's someone that knows how to do this. And that's my God, you know? And so I give that all up to him. And I am trying to give that all up to him while remaining that joystick to be on the ground. And just understanding that, you know, life's a process, and how exciting is this season that I'm in right now with these potential doors down the way and finding contentment within the chaos of life.
So good. And I want to make this next thing an all play, because what you're talking about is a season where a lot of people are finding themselves, that anxiety levels are high, trust levels are a little low. There's a lot of spinning, a lot of pooping in people's punch bowls. It's just, you know, that's a current experience for a lot of people, even a lot of people who wear the name of Jesus. And the question that I wrote down in my journal about a week ago was, why is it that the really, really important things that are locked down don't have a greater impact on those lesser important things now? What? We are loved. Jesus has secured for us an eternal future of beauty and love and relationship. We've been saved from the wrath of God. We've been given meaning and a purpose. And so we've got these high-level important things that don't always find touch points in today. What do we need to do?
Let me just say that I know I am comfortable in that 7 to 10 range of excitement and chaos. I'm actually pretty comfortable in the 1 to 4 range. But 5 and 6 is the average days and the mundane, and I'm working towards longer term goals, but I haven't arrived there. Like you're saying with the, you know, if you're looking at marriage, career, and what you would qualify as quote unquote major life milestones, how do we, and this is my question that I'm still trying to answer. So thank you for allowing us to reset, but it sounds like Jonathan, like you and I have this in common. How do you just navigate joyfully and faithfully through the average and the mundane? Because you've talked about very pronounced experiences, both high highs and low lows. So that middle ground is like, what am I even supposed to do with this? Because I've gotten through the high highs, I've ridden it, I've gotten through these incredibly low lows, but now this just kind of feels, this isn't an EDM song anymore. This is like, I don't know what it is. So I don't have an answer for your question, Craig. I'm still trying to figure it out. And it sounds, Jonathan, like you're trying to figure it out a little bit too.
Yeah, that makes three of us right now, like just a triangle of not having an answer. But I'll tell you what we had, you know, this morning in our conversation and just about some stuff you've done recently is going back to, what is the basis of what is your purpose, or what are you using to live right now? Right. And you put it so well in this, that a lot of people, including myself, allow fear to be our gods. We allow fear to be our gods. We allow fear to run our mechanism of existing, to guide our choices, to encourage our words. And what a false sense of how a motor works, because that's just not, you know, how that's not fear in my life led me to very uncomfortable places. And I'll tell you, God calls us not to fear. I mean, I think about Moses, I think about Joshua, I think about all these key people in the Bible that, hey, Joshua, you're going to take over this city. Like, Jericho is going to be yours. You're going to defeat this army. That looks pretty intense. Like, you know, you're going to walk around this place, you know, seven times and the walls are going to fall. You know, the fear, you know, overwhelms me in those times. So I guess, yeah, like that's the one thing I'm hearing. I don't have an answer completely to that question, but that's,
well, I'm hearing something interesting there that I'm trying to synthesize is if we aren't overcoming fear and if we're living and operating too much out of fear, then we're probably going to be in that purgatory of affect, that we're not putting ourselves in situations where God wants us to grow and help people and love courageously and open ourselves up for loss and love and highs and lows. So, but maybe that's wrong too. I mean, the mundane Morris, please just come in and land this plane, make it all work, huh?
You know, I like to ask questions. I really enjoyed the imagery that you had got to experience about a bucket of white paint just being poured on you. What's the difference between being painted white and feeling like you're being painted white? What's the difference there?
There's a process of the paint running down you that is overcome by like this excitingness of the paint falling on you, you know, and then being fully overcome by the paint, feeling renewed, feeling all these other things that took so much space, took so much of my existence, that kind of seemed that they were distancing themselves for the first time.
Yeah.
And going to the extremes, and the extremes I've learned how to at least trust, focus, have more faith, pour more water into this, yes, or do more of this, add some more salt, add some more pep, whatever it may, yes, be, you know, analogies out the wazoo. But there is, it's a work in progress with the mundane.
Yeah.
But I feel that there's when you said what is happening while the paint is being poured over you to when you have the paint.
To me, feeling that freshness of the fresh white coat of paint is a feeling. It's an experience. And we walk away from that and we're white a day after, 2 days after. And what we're talking essentially metaphorically is about Jesus and what he does for us, right? Yeah. Because he washes us, he separates our sin as far as east is from the west. We are clean. And when we find, I'll just speak for myself, when we find ourselves in the five or six range, Alex, as you described, I start to forget I am white because of what Jesus did. I may not feel that, but I still forget that. And so I get a little can of white out. Remember that? A little white out with a little, little brush on it and always got crumbly and
easy
never
open.
And that's right. It made your papers look horrible. But I get some white out and I start trying to put it on myself because I like the feeling of being white. I feel like feeling the newness, and I don't like the spots that start showing up because of bad decisions or having wounds inflicted from other people. Forgetting that he's made me clean, that he's made me whole. Could that be a part of it? Is not necessarily just longing after the experience of being made white, but realizing, trusting, okay, I'm white. You know, I'm not a spotted leopard.
I think that can absolutely, I mean, that is the feeling associated with it.
Yeah.
You know, I went into what was happening and possibly what I was feeling during that, but it's renewing. And you're right. Like, I often forget of the biggest victory, right? And we talked about that last week of living for victory or living from victory. And before that paint was even on me, like, I was already living from victory.
Yes.
I didn't know it. But that is a really, really good feeling,
yes,
of watching or becoming anew, refreshing.
Yes.
It's like a spa day.
Well, and it's almost like we need other people around us, community. You guys are both really good at community, but we almost need that. What I heard when you were describing Matt in the hospital, you talked about a faith and a trust that probably exceeded his, and that would have exceeded yours if you were the one laying in the bed. And so sometimes we do have to look to other people around us to be reminded of that. Hey, you are loved more than you can ever imagine. Well, Jesus died for you because he wanted to have a relationship with you. And that's so beautiful when we hold on to that. I don't know. It just does. It seems to change the fives and the sixes. It seems to alter the significance, importance. You know, we put over importance on so many things that make contentment almost impossible. And I mean, we're all guilty as accused on that. But
oh, no matter where we're at on that 1 to 10 scale, if we're living from victory, you could shift it back to binary and call it a one, yes, and call it a win. But if we're living, yeah, for victory, we can call it a zero. And
yes,
and any number becomes, yeah, a zero if we're trying to achieve it on our own, right?
Yes. Yes. So good. Because we do. We want to make, we're men who want to achieve. We want to have the victory. We want to, my neighbor used to say, they don't build statues to teams. He wanted a statue. He's like, I don't want to be a part of a team. I want a statue of just me, you know? And gosh, that's so human nature, isn't it? That we want the statue, we want the applause, and learning how to experience that pivot where we realize, wow, maybe the one who is painted shouldn't be the one getting the applause. Maybe it should be the painter. Mm. So, Jonathan, thank you for visiting us today. Thank you for sharing your story. I love it. I think it's going to encourage a lot of people, because what I heard was God seeks after you sometimes in curveballs and strange places. And if we are trying to drown out that still small voice, then we need to let him speak louder and more clearly, because we are drowning out the voice that's going to help that part of our soul heal in an unbelievable way. And so thank you. Thank you for sharing with us. Thank you for encouraging us. Thank you, Alex. We also want to thank the people behind Go Ministry International and The Walk, who sponsor this podcast. They're generous people who have a heart to see other people experience the truth that, hey, guess what? Jesus died. Jesus was painted red so that you may be painted white. Yeah. And so
good.
Thank you for listening to us. Thank you for joining us. Have a great day.